KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
Carpentry is one thing. I can work, you know, me and another person building a whole set, and we can maintain relative distance and be minimally exposed. But in terms of production, once the cameras and the lights arrive and talent, it's all a nightmare. I absolutely wouldn't take a gig like that at this point.
Rob West usually spends his days building sets and making props. But once the pandemic hit, he used his skills to devise and manufacture effective, durable face shields for medical personnel. It's a volunteer effort, and West definitely would like to get back to paid work soon, but he's not sure the industry is ready. West tells us about running his face shield making operation out of a well-stocked American Legion bar and explains how he's been able to get vital PPE to more than 40 LA area medical facilities. But first on the News Banter, Hollywood plots to open up. Stay tuned. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my colleague in banter, Matt Bellany. Hi, Matt.
Hi there.
So let's talk about a lot of news going on. Hollywood is shut down and the news doesn't stop. I mean, it's shut down in terms of production. However, let's just quickly touch on Jeff Shell, who is the CEO now of NBC Universal. He executed a long planned reorg. He is now, you know, really in the chair over there, and he has decided to do a couple of things, one of which is he promoted Mark Lazarus, who had been seen as his rival for this top job at NBC Universal. He now is in charge of entertainment. He was, you know, really running a lot of sports stuff and very well regarded. But Jeff Shell was the son of Comcast and, you know, in the family, not literally, but he'd been there for a long time. He's seen as the better presenter in a public setting for a public company. But he's keeping Lazarus. A lot of times people leave when they're passed over for a job like that, but that's not happening. And then, of course, of note is the departure of Andy Lack as head of NBC News. And Andy Lack had a lot of controversy, not just the killing of Ronan Farrow's Harvey Weinstein story, but the expensive and massively failed Megyn Kelly hire that just turned into an embarrassment and failed, as I said. So a lot of people were like, why is Andy Lack still here? And I think the answer is because Steve Burke, who has been chairman of NBC Universal, protected him. That's my belief. Other people are now like, why is Noah Oppenheim still here? He runs the news division under Andy Lack. And many people who have read Ronan Farrow's work think that Noah Oppenheim was part of the killing of the Harvey Weinstein story.
Yeah, the one interesting thing here is that, you know, a lot of speculation centered on Noah Oppenheim getting the top chairman job running all of NBC's news properties. And Steve Burke had pretty explicitly said that Oppenheim was in line for that job. Now we see that job did not go to Oppenheim. It went to Cesar Conte, who was running Telemundo, another one of NBC's properties. And he is now going to take oversight of all of the news divisions, including CNBC, which was not under Lack previously. This is a bit of a slap in the face to Oppenheim, even if he was not shown the door, as some speculated after the Ronan Farrow piece. But he doesn't get that promotion that a lot of people thought he would get. And now some say that there may be a ticking clock. He may wait till after the election and then leave. Or he may, you know, he has a career as a screenwriter as well. That was mentioned in the Harvey Weinstein reporting by Ronan Farrow. He may decide to move back to LA or to pursue screenwriting full time again. But it is, in my opinion, a commentary on what went down with Ronan Farrow that Noah Oppenheim did not get that big promotion.
It is my understanding that Noah Oppenheim was able to portray himself as sort of the victim of a higher up badness. A lot of people won't buy that because, you know, Ronan Farrow and his producer, Rich McHugh, you know, sort of recorded meetings after talking to Noah Oppenheim in real time. And I would say they don't play well, but we will see. I mean, obviously he has been passed over. So that's that. Let me turn to the issue of Hollywood reopening. Hollywood is desperate to reopen, of course, but it's very, very difficult and tricky to make it safe and to avoid insane financial risk that you might have from, starting something that you then have to shut down. Who knows, potential for litigation, all kinds of problems. We are seeing Disney report results that underscore the need. They just a partial result from the past quarter that where they reported was a staggering loss, and it's going to be worse the next quarter. So you know why they need to move forward, and they're trying.
They are about to reopen the Shanghai park, and you know they are going to have new procedures in place, like a 25% capacity and social distancing in the lines and protective gear for everyone except the characters who are in costumes. You know, it is a new normal at the Disney park there, but it is a template for how they could potentially reopen the parks around the world. And I think a lot of people are going to be watching to see how that plays out, because if there are people who get infected at a Disney park, that could mean an entire, you know, completely new round of shutdowns that would be devastating. These Q2 numbers they reported were bad. They were, you know, they're not going to do a dividend this year, and the profits were down significantly, but it's nothing compared to what the Q3 numbers are going to be, because that encompasses the entirety of the shutdown so far, where there have been no film releases, no theme parks, no cruises, no sports on ESPN. It is just going to be a crippling, crippling quarter for the Walt Disney Company. And they're, no surprise, already looking to how they get this train running again.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Ted Sarandos, who is the chief content officer at Netflix, had an op-ed in the LA Times talking about this. They, he says, are going back into production in places like Iceland, South Korea, not as surprising as Sweden, where they have not had the kind of lockdown that other Nordic countries have had, and their death rate reflects that, their numbers of deaths and illnesses. But they are, in that case, putting on a more stringent 14-day quarantine, he says, before they even start. Other countries, not so much. The Czech Republic is doing a thing where you can get tested kind of on your way in, and if you get a negative result, then you can go ahead without that long quarantine. You know, the question to me is any talent of note getting on a plane right now and flying anywhere? And I think that is, I don't know, maybe if you have a corporate jet and you sanitize it, but a lot of problems with crew. And, you know, there are myriad problems, but Sarandos is saying this has to happen and is starting to happen and, you know, has to be tried and figured out.
Yeah, I've seen every kind of proposal from, you know, doing a shoot in phases where you reduce the number of people on set because you only have the explicitly needed personnel for a particular scene, and then they all go away, and then the next people come in. I've seen some proposals where, you know, the CEO of Viacom CBS says that they can work towards getting their studio shows back into production first, because that is a controlled environment where you can do it without a studio audience, you can sanitize relentlessly, and, you know, have spacing amongst people. And, you know, maybe that's a path back at some point. But all of this, in my opinion, is predicated on a quality and consistent testing procedure, which we still don't have in this country. So I don't see this really coming back in any meaningful way until we get it.
We are seeing a couple of places try shows, you know, pandemic shows. Jenji Cohen is doing one for Netflix. Freeform just announced one. You know, for me, I watch old world, our previous life shows, and I think a lot of people bump on people at restaurants, people hugging and kissing, and then, you know, but do you want to watch people in quarantine? I guess if it's well done, I would watch it. Is it too soon, Matt? I don't know.
Well, it's interesting because the live competition shows like American Idol and The Voice have been doing versions where they film at home. And I've watched them, and, you know, they're not the same, and it's kind of awkward to watch, but it is still the essence of what those shows are. And CBS tried it with a drama called All Rise, where they filmed it remotely, and the ratings were not good, and the production was a bit awkward, but they did try it, and they're doing these things so that there can be a template for people to try this stuff to get back to work. I think that's the main thing here, is people want to get back to work, shows want to get back into production, they just got to figure out how.
Yeah. You know, the question of revenue, advertising is getting brutalized. And now the networks are having to do, they're not doing live upfronts, obviously not packing Carnegie Hall or Lincoln Center like they have traditionally done. They're going to do these virtually. And meanwhile, they're canceling their summer press tour. I mean, launching or maintaining momentum is going to be hard going forward. It's just going to be a changed world. We're seeing things about how they might do the red carpet and have a virtual red carpet or spacing. And, you know, the quote that hit me, Matt, was the one that said, you're not going to have these buffets. And I know this is obnoxious at a time when people are challenged, but man, we've seen some good buffets, and I guess we're not going to see any more for a long time.
Yeah, that, Mindy Kaling actually tweeted that much. She said she's really going to miss craft services on a set.
I still remember that Shape of Water premiere where perhaps tastelessly, there was an amazing raw bar. But, you know, people have much more serious problems than that. So we won't dwell. We'll say thank you for the memories. Then thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, former editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. Coming up after a short break, prop maker Rob West tells us how a group of out-of-work Hollywood freelancers are making face shields for hospitals. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. As Matt and I just discussed, TV and film production remains largely at a standstill. But Rob West, he may be out of work, but he's working hard. West is a Hollywood carpenter and prop maker who's devised effective and reusable transparent face shields for frontline medical workers. Once he figured out a prototype, he got other freelance industry workers involved. They started fabricating hundreds of face shields a day out of his house in Hollywood, but recently they've moved to an American Legion post in Monterey Park. Rob West talked to us from his current studio, which, as you might hear in the background, is buzzing with activity. While mass producing face shields has been a first for West, he says before the pandemic hit, his work called on him to make all kinds of things on short notice.
Sometimes I would be a carpenter on a film set building a fake living room on a soundstage. Other days I would do other art department related things in production, usually small budget films or music videos. And in between those gigs, I work at prop fabrication facilities that manufacture various hand props or costume pieces, sometimes helmets or crowns or fake guns or any of that sort of stuff. Well, there's actually a prominent Anaheim theme park that I've done some work for that I'm not allowed to talk about.
I wonder which one that is. I'm really going to have to think that one over. Okay. So you've done a lot of this. You're just, in some extent, jack of all trades type of person.
In terms of making things, yeah, I used to build motorcycles as well. I worked in a factory making custom LEDs, like prop toys for dancers and the Burning Man crowd and those sorts of markets. And in that place, I really learned a lot about what it takes to produce something, to assemble something in an assembly line. I learned, you know, that every second on each unit counts, every millisecond counts. And so I learned how to set things up in a way where no one's wrists are getting fatigued and they're, you know, everything's at a good working height and everything is accessible and all the tools that we need, there's always an overstock of. There's just certain things you learn in those environments that I was able to translate over to this. And I don't know how I would have done it without it.
Well, did work just suddenly stop for you with the pandemic?
It sort of trickled over a few weeks. During the holiday season, most productions take time off, sometimes a couple of months off. So there's very little work usually from the end of October through middle of January, end of January. So I know a lot of people who have been out of work, you know, that work on bigger budget things that haven't had a gig since October. I was lucky enough to, like I said, be in prop production facilities that were still getting gigs. And I was able to hang in there until I think mid-January or so. And a lot of people, though, haven't seen the season pick back up. You know, it's just holidays and then COVID. And so they're really hit especially hard. And a lot of them are still waiting on their unemployment. And that's been a whole debacle with having them have to work out how to file as a 1099 and verifying their employment. It's very difficult for some people. So
you know how they're getting by? I mean, is the unions helping or anything?
I'm not in a union personally, so I don't really know what sort of support they would be providing. But I know a lot of the freelance non-union people such as myself have just been living as cheaply as we can and trying to get by and just waiting on those checks to show up.
Right. It's hard. So in the midst of all that, you see something on Facebook, a call out for help in terms of PPE, that we all is now the acronym that we all know that we didn't know before the pandemic. Tell me about that and how you reacted.
Well, I had been looking for a couple of weeks into how I could use my fabrication skills to help the community with the coming pandemic. I felt like the need for ventilators and respirators would be very high. So I initially looked into those sort of technologies and found that testing the efficacy of things that you create in that realm was just far beyond the scope of anything I could do. You know, that's the sort of thing that you need to give to MIT or the FDA or someone. So I quickly pivoted once I found someone had, a fellow art department person had posted on Facebook on an art department group, hey, are there any fabricators out there who might be able to make this face shield? We have this design that we found online. I think rather randomly, some doctors on the East Coast had put together like a PDF with a couple of numbers and a basic shape. And they said, this is all we need. Who can make it? And that, I guess, got around to this ER doctor who is a friend of this art department person posting. And he said, hey, my ER doctor friend needs these shields. Can anyone make them? And I said to myself, I could definitely do that. And I went and found some materials within a few hours at my prop shops that I work at, like Tom Talman's studio. And he just sort of, Tom there just gave me everything I needed to get started and get a prototype and make a few extras. And once we had those sort of checked out and tested and the doctor was okay with them, we proceeded with the doctor himself put over $1,000 into materials for me to make 600 for the three hospitals where he works. And I made those 600. They started a crowdfunding page in order to pay themselves back, that couple. And they ended up getting more and more donations pouring in. We were at more than double recouped costs within, I think, a day or two. So we were able to make more, and we've just sort of been skating on that ever since, spending our money as quick as we can get it and churning these out as quickly as possible. We're at probably about 300 to 400 that we can do per day at the moment.
Wow. You did some kind of a mock-up for the doctor, right?
Yeah, the initial prototype for the face shield is something that I had worked out with one of my prop making mentors, and we talked about the various materials that could be used, what would be cheapest, what would be easiest to work with, and then also what would be cleanable, re-sterilizable. One of the biggest, most important things about the design to us is that they're reusable and they'll last weeks and weeks with heavy use as long as they're cared for, because they're fairly scratch resistant. They're not prone to breaking anywhere. There's no metal anywhere on them, no staples to rust. And so the people that we have distributed to, very few of them have come back asking for more. And so far they're holding up really well in the field.
How do you get, I mean, I'm just reading where Jared Kushner is having difficulty with his task force because all of these volunteers have no experience, it turns out. I just reading that in the Washington Post before I got on this interview with you. And I thought, well, how did you get volunteers who knew what they were doing, and how did you get materials?
Well, I think it's much more important to just be able to explain well what you're doing. And I pride myself on my ability to teach and sort of coach people through it. And so we've pulled in many people that are way out of their wheelhouse. The person that's working with me to my side here right now is actress Crystal Cooper. And she has never done anything in the fabrication realm at all, besides a little, crafting a Mother's Day card here and there. So we
can you put her on the phone for half a second?
Sure. Yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Crystal. We're just going to ask you quickly, like, how did you learn to do whatever it is that you're doing? What are you doing? And how did you learn it? How did you decide to get involved?
Well, actually, I live across the street from Rob, and I had seen what he was doing and asked if there was anything that I can do. And he just kind of taught me the process, and I've been very fortunate to be able to help and assist with this. Keeps my mind off of, you know, all of the horrible things that are going on, and it's just really been just really healthy for me to be able to focus on something and not all the pain.
Right. So what are you doing exactly?
Well, I have various things. Every day is kind of different. I process cutting out by hand all of the face shields and then attaching a strap to it and then attaching a piece of rubber foam to that. So every day is kind of different, and it's interesting to just kind of be led by Rob, who's a great fabricator, and he's taught me a lot.
You're like a pandemic Rosie the Riveter right now, because I guess you didn't have much background in this and you're now making masks. So who'd have thunk it? Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Can you give me back to Rob? I really appreciate your talking to us about this.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much.
So you have these volunteers. We just talked to Crystal. And how did you figure out how to get the materials?
Well, that's something I have a little bit of experience with. Fabricating, I knew of a couple places that have industrial materials, but it does require a few different stores for the stuff that we're doing. So some of those things are available online, and of course, you know, it takes a village to do a thing like this. And so I've reached out to a lot of different people to get advice about who might have stock, who's open as an essential business, who might give discounts or even a free donation of materials.
You were doing all of this, I assume, remotely, and also the solicitation of volunteers remotely?
Well, there hasn't been much solicitation of volunteers, actually. It's been a lot. We started off initially doing this in my house, and we only moved just a couple of days ago out of my house. And being there in the heart of Hollywood, we had a good amount of foot traffic, people walking by, mostly people walking their dogs. And so we got several dog walkers in to join us. So much of working well together and quickly together and efficiently is just sort of the personalities in the room. And so we've enjoyed being able to kind of, you know, cherry pick the people that work best with us in order to have the most smoothest running organization. So there have been passersby that come in and, you know, come in for a day, and other people that have been here with us almost every day for the last month. It's not always the easiest to work with everyone. So instead of having a hiring process, we really just kind of have a testing out, you know, sure, join us for a couple hours and we'll try it out.
Right.
A big part of this is keeping the morale up for the group. People very quickly and easily get burned out when there's no money available, when it's not a paycheck that they absolutely need. Keeping people interested is a lot about trying to make it as fun as possible, even though we're doing we're doing things in a very emotionally heavy time.
Yes, absolutely. How do you manage to socially distance?
Well, that's tricky at times. We didn't have a whole lot of space at my house, and we don't have a lot more space right now. We're currently at the American Legion Post 397 in Monterey Park, and they've been so kind to us in giving us a facility to use. It's actually their bar, so it feels very at home. I used to work in bars years ago.
I'll ask, and stocked or not stocked?
Fully stocked. And okay. We're actually maintaining pretty good self-control here. But the end of the day is definitely a little more fun. So yeah, we try to maintain distance as best we can and keep masks on. But the number one thing for us is not introducing too many new people. And that also speaks again to pulling in volunteers. We just can't really run the risk of bringing in too many people too quickly. So we've sort of waded through that slowly and made it as safe as we can. We try to keep surfaces clean, but we do have to come within 6 feet of each other from time to time. Sometimes you just need to lift something heavy. And that's a risk that I don't encourage any of my volunteers to take, but one that they are taking nonetheless to get the job done.
Wow. Now, are you finding that demand is still strong?
It has been up until maybe 3 or 4 days ago. It's sort of turning a corner. The facilities that we distribute to have not needed many more. Like I said, they've been reused many times and they're holding up. So I think LA is on the way out in terms of its needs in the ERs and ICUs and ORs out there, assuming they continue to hold up. But there is a much greater need happening right now with all of those sort of medical adjacent businesses like dentists and physical therapists and other people who definitely have to work right up against the public. So we may try to find a way to pivot to provide those for the community at low cost and try to support everyone staying as safe as possible.
Oh, yeah. I would imagine that would be I don't know if you're thinking it could be a business, even keeping your costs low, but it seems like you would not be unreasonable to make it a business.
Yeah, I wonder what all would go into that exactly. Of course, the idea has been floated, like, why not go legit? It's a emergency thing, an ad hoc business that we came up with, but why not just go and get the permits and all that? But that's a year, 2 year long process in a lot of cases that I know of. So I'm not entirely sure we would be able to do that without, you know, a lawyer working for us pro bono and
everybody hear that out there?
Yeah, we'll give you big shout outs on Instagram and everywhere else. There's all kinds of celebrities really enjoying retweeting us right now. So we'll get your name out there if you want to come give us legal help.
So now where are you in terms of thinking about, you know, there's all kinds of chatter and discussion about possibly ways to return to production. Is that something you foresee coming? Is it something that you would be comfortable with if you were called upon to, you know, go back to work?
Well, I would have a lot of questions about exactly how that would go before taking any sort of gig like that. You have to consider hazard pay. I don't know how they would be able to keep the whole crew from getting infected. I don't know how you can maintain social distance on a production film set. I mean, carpentry is one thing. I can work, you know, me and another person building a whole set, and we can maintain relative distance and be minimally exposed. But in terms of production, once the cameras and the lights arrive and talent, it's all a nightmare. I absolutely wouldn't take a gig like that at this point. But I think that where my mind goes with it is, well, here comes the second big spike here. We're going to see a need from the community very quickly when a lot of people get sick, when things are prematurely reopened. You know, I can't help but think about the graph I've seen going around of how things went in 1918. Things got so much worse when things were prematurely put back into place. So I think we should all be cautious and turn those jobs down whenever possible, just for the safety of everyone else. You know, even if you're going to be fine, there are immune-compromised people out there who are going to die because of these decisions for money.
Yeah, it's hard when you have no income, but on the other hand, death is permanent.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a tough spot.
Well, congratulations on what sounds like an amazing effort. I hope we get the miracle that we need to get our lives back. And best of luck with it. Rob West is a prop maker and the founder of LA Face Shields. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
If you want to learn more about Rob West's organization, make a request for face shields, or contribute for materials, visit lafaceshields.org. And special thanks to actress and LA Face Shields volunteer, Crystal Cooper, for hopping on the line with no notice. And that's the business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program, and Paul Smith mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts on the KCRW app. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.